John Redfern, Reel 6.
They had gone for the soft targets. And to go back again, we managed it. We got all the public baths and everything going, and I found with the medical apparatus from the regiments that were with us, the Leicesters, the Gurkhas, the Royal Artillery, that we had sufficient to deal with them, and because we only had one or two landing craft from supplied us by the Navy to go back to Athens with the men after they'd been deloused, rested, reclothed, fed, and it all had to be done in small groups, which were perfectly adequate. And we got them all back to Athens from where they were then debriefed and sent back to England. From Volos, we then were sent up to the Albania-Yugoslav frontier with 5 Brigade, with divisional headquarters in Salonika, and 7 Brigade looking after Bulgaria and Turkey. We had the Rajputana Rifles looking after the Albanian frontier, and we had the Essex Regiment, the British Regiment, looking after the Yugoslav side of it. And they were based in Edessa, the Essex Regiment, the battalion headquarters, with company detachments in other main towns opposite the Yugoslav. And the Albanian, Rajputana Rifles were based south on a wonderful lake. But again, we had problems. I was asked by the brigadier to do a recce, because a lot of the soldiers there were getting malaria. And I was asked to do a brief on whether it was a good idea for the troops to come into the town or to remain out in the open. So I went along with I took the MO with me, and we went to this place on the Albanian frontier. In fact, it's the last big town prior to going into Albania, and there is only one road into Albania from there, although there are the smugglers' ways, or the other ways. But the battalion headquarters was in the town, but the companies were distributed amongst the mountains. And we made a recce. We asked company commanders, we asked platoon commanders what they thought, and the CO what he thought. Of course, the CO said he didn't really mind whether he was in town or outside the town. But the company commanders were all for going into the town amongst the buildings, not being in the open. So anyway, the conclusions that we came to, the doctor and I, were that it was perfectly okay to live in the towns as long as they were DDT'd. All the buildings and all the areas had to be DDT'd first. And that had to be done under the medical authority. And that it was perfectly okay to bring people into the town if it was thought that this was necessary. This was approved by the brigadier. And so orders were issued that the medical authorities would go and DDT the whole lot everywhere, all the rooms, open spaces. And as soon as this was done, it was up to the commanding officer then to either bring them in or leave them where they were. And it did appear from figures that this was successful.
Why was it necessary to have troops on these borders?
Because there were infiltrations from Albania and Yugoslavia. To give you an example of this, we were in Florina. We were in charge of the town. And one day the police commandant came up to me and said, "Would you come to my prison, please?" I said, "Yes, certainly." And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Well," he said, "I've got somebody here that might be of interest to you." So he showed me to a cell and straw, clean straw and everything, and inside was an American soldier. And I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I'm an American soldier, but my relatives and people are in Albania, in Tirana." I said, "You're not going in there, are you?" I said, "Because it's not worth your while." I said, "You won't get there, for a start." I said, "Secondly, you'll probably lose your life. And thirdly, if you don't lose your life, you could be taken prisoner and incarcerated with nobody knowing anything about you." He said, "I'm going there." I said, "All right." I said, "I'm not going to stop you." I said, "I should give orders to the CO who's looking after this particular area that you are not to be allowed through the brigadier." But I said, "Apart from that," I said, "it's up to you." I said to the police bloke, I said, "Well, you can release him and let him do what he wants." Anyway, police bloke said that he'd gone, and he was going to have a go. So I said, "All right, fair enough." And I thought no more about it. I told the brigadier. He said, "Okay." And so that was all right. And then about a week later, these folks said, "Will you come down again, please?" So I said, "Yes." And he took me into a cell. And there was this bloke. He hadn't got a stitch on him. And I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well," he said, "I got about 4 or 5 kilometers in and they set on me." He said, "They robbed me of everything, my boots, my clothes, my watch, and then they turned me loose." And he said, "I've made my way back here." And I said, "Well, you're damn lucky, that's all I can say."
Where had he come from?
Albania, from Tirana, but he only got about 4 or 5 kilometers in before the Albanians had discovered him and just pinched everything off him.
But what nationality was he?
He was American, American Army, but with Albanian relatives. And we clothed him, we fed him, we let him sleep, and we sent him on his way back to his unit, wherever that was. I presume it must have been somewhere south Athens, because we never saw any American people where we were. And after a while we were relieved. Oh, there was another thing too. I had to go into Thessaloniki for something or other on behalf of the brigadier. And on my way back, I came back, I went one way and I came back another way across the top by the frontiers, by the Yugoslav frontier. And as I was coming back, rather a desolate area, there was a village on my left. And coming away from it, there was a bloke wearing the Yugoslav uniform with the star, with the red star on it. And I said to my driver, I said, well, here's a Yugoslav bloke. Do we take him or do we let him go? Because officially, he was a prisoner of war as far as we were concerned. He should not be in Greece. And he shrugged his shoulders. And I said, well, I said, if I take him and take him back to the brigadier, I should probably be blasted to hell for bothering about the whole thing and causing problems, paperwork and so on and so forth. I said, let's leave him. Young G-sob, G-sob. So we left him, let him go back. But I afterwards found out that it was a Yugoslav village, although it was in Greek territory, because there are quite a number of them there in that area. And the Yugoslavs, they claim their pound of meat, and they have to go off and do their service in the Yugoslav army, irrespective of where they're living. And this was one of them. He's only a boy, but nevertheless, he shouldn't have been there. And he was unarmed, I must admit. He wasn't armed. If he'd been armed, might have been a different matter. But that was that. So that's one of the reasons why we had to control Yugoslav and Albanian borders. Then we were pulled out. And we were told that we had to go back and protect northwest Salonika. And other troops came in, took over from us. And Brigade HQ went back to Veria, which was 40 kilometers northwest of Salonika on the main road to Florina, or the Kazani. And the 9th Gurkhas went to Kazani, and the Essex went to another place to the right, where there's a wonderful waterfall. And we had a platoon of Gurkhas with us at Brigade HQ to protect us against intrusions.
Were there any intrusions there?
No. We didn't see much at all there. It was quiet, very quiet. Except that we did have a place called Nausa, and which was a hotbed of LS, and we had a company of Gurkhas stationed there, and they used to raid various areas there and be quite successful in finding guns and ammunition and things.
Had you come across many infiltrators in the area further west on the Albanian Yugoslav front?
Not really. No, we weren't really looking for them, but we were merely concerned that possibly the Yugoslavs might make raids in, and the Albanians might try something, because the Yugoslavs were very much interested in the north side there. We were really there as a preventative against the Yugoslavs and the Albanians. And they were after a big cheese called Grobus or somebody. But we frightened him off and he went into Albania.
And it was at Verria that you met Mrs. Redfern?
And it was in Verria that I met Mrs. Redfern, yes.
How did it come about?
Well, I was at Brigade HQ, and the interpreter came in one day and said, was anybody going into Salonika? And I said, yes, I was. He said, what time are you going? I said, about 2 o'clock. So he said, would I be prepared to take a student back to Salonika University, for the university, had I got room? I said, I got room for one. He said, okay. He said, will you take her? I said, yes. I said, tell her that I will pick her up at 2 o'clock, but if she's late, she will not be picked up. And because the Greeks, their idea of time is about, oh, an hour or two out. If you say 2 o'clock, they'll appear at 3 o'clock or something like that. Anyway, he said, okay, I'll relay the message. And he came back and said, that's all right, she'll be there. I said, you make quite sure she's going to be proper. He said, yes, she'll be there at 2 o'clock. I said, okay. So I picked her up at 2 o'clock, and with my Gurkha driver. And she then said she'd got another friend. I said, well, I'm very sorry. You can see my Jeep is full. I said, I can't. I've got nowhere to sit her. She'll have to wait for another vehicle, which will be along a bit later, and she can get on that. So this other friend, which is now in England, in fact, she hasn't given you a name, actually, but is now living in Manchester with an English husband. But I took her into Salonika and dumped her at the university, and then went to divisional headquarters where I had some work to do, and then came back to Verria. And I didn't see her again for 3 months or so while she was at university, and then I was told she was back at home. So I went and visited her, and then got introduced to her mother and her father. Her father was a professor of languages who taught French and Latin, and also he was in charge of all the school education for the whole of Virya. And he was a good bloke. And all this, by the way, went on in French because nobody spoke English and I didn't speak Greek, but I spoke a little French. And so this was all done in French. And then I was invited to supper. And it would appear that for this supper, I didn't know it at the time, but it appeared that for this supper they'd gone round begging food from all the people so that to give me a sap-up dinner, and which was very, very good. I enjoyed it very much. And so it progressed from there. During this period, we also had the elections to the return of the monarchy. And I was put in charge of that, make the arrangements. And so I went and saw the mayor. And explained that we were to assist in the preparations if necessary, and the actual day of the elections if necessary, but we were not going to help in any way if it was not required. We were told that everything for the moment was all right and was not required. But they thanked us for the help. They also had a Greek battalion there from the Royal Greeks, the Greek army, reformed from Egypt, which had come. It was a battalion there with a CO and everything in Virya. But we didn't really have much to do. We liaised with them and told them we were there if we were doing, but they in the main were responsible for everything. And if anything untoward happened, then we were there as a backup more than anything else.
So this, rather than an election, was a plebiscite, you mean?
It was a plebiscite. Well, it was for the return of the monarchy, yes. And the day came, and at 7 o'clock in the morning, the interpreter came to me and said, "Johnny," he said, "something's up." I said, "What do you mean, something's up?" He said, "Well, there's nobody coming in to vote. It's 7 o'clock, and he said the election started at 6, and they should have been in. So I said, "Oh, well, what do you want me to do about it?" He said, "I would like you to come and have a look and see what's happening." So I said, "All right, have you got my Jeep?" He said, "Yes, I've got that." Okay. So we hopped into the Jeep and we went down to the fork road of the entrance from Salonika and the other road which went to Edessa. And there, to our astonishment, we saw some Greek troops with a barricade across both roads and hordes of people behind them. So I went up to the soldier and said, "What's this? Let them through." He said, "No," he said, "it can't. My CO says that I can't." I said, "Why not?" He said, "They've all got to be vetted." I said, "Vetted for what?" He said, "To see which villages they come from." He said, "We're only allowed to let certain villages through." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, well, he said, now, sir, for instance, we can't let anybody through from there because they're communists. But he said, there are other villages that are royalists. I said, this is an independent... I said, this is an independent election. He said, well, I cannot disobey my CO's order. I said, open those barricades. He said, no. I said, all right. So I went and got the brigadier up, who wasn't very pleased. And I told him what was happening. He said, right. He said, I will go and see the CO and the mayor. And he shot off, and he gave them an ultimatum. And he said, if the barricades are not lifted within 1 hour from now, he said, I will unleash the Gurkha troops on you. So, the interpreter came to me and said, John, are we going down at about 5 minutes to the hour to see what's happening? I said, yes, we are. And at 5 to 8, or thereabouts, there was still no action. I said, have you received any orders? No. I said, right. Anyway, at 1 minute to 8, they lifted the barricades and the horde simply flew in to vote. And they extended the hours of voting so that they could all get in, and from then on there was no more trouble. So that was that. And but apart from that, we also started the ferry going from, because the bridge had been blown across the river down the bottom in the valley, and I started a ferry going across, charging 1 drachma for army vehicles and 2 drachma for the civilians for everything, with a ferry to cross this river to the other side towards where Alexander's summer palace was. I've forgotten the name of it now, but it's now been fully excavated at the moment, and they're finding lots and lots of treasure. Well, they found, which is now exhibited in the museum in Salonika.
Seems strange that the villagers should have voted as villagers rather than as individuals.
Well, that was the way the head man used to gather them all together and push them all in. But they have to vote. That's the thing. Their passes are marked as such, and they cannot leave the country unless they're marked. And even to this day, if they haven't voted and they haven't paid their taxes, they can't leave the country. Even now. But it's... I didn't think much of it at the time, but now you come to mention it, of course, that was the reason. Everyone had an identity card, and if you hadn't got an identity card, it meant to say that you either hadn't voted or you hadn't paid your taxes. So you had to have one, or you